So I'm Mike, and I am the lowly person at the bottom of that. Dr. Glick and Dr. Eisenman are the PIs for this CDC-funded study that is about partnerships between local health departments and CBOs and FBOs, community and faith-based organizations. This is a three-year study, and this is going to be part of the preliminary findings as they're coming across. We're not done with the study yet. There are no disclosures to make. So what we're really looking at, again, are relationships. Our understanding, especially in a time of constrained resources, is that the health departments can do their own jobs better if they have good relationships. That, you know, with these organizations, they can be more effective and so forth. I also want to add that my disclosure, I guess, even though it's not financial, is that I'm stealing a lot of this from my dissertation. So that's how that works. Dr. Glick is on my committee and so forth. So here are the different components of the study. Right now, we're in the process of collecting survey responses. I think we our N right now is like a 216 or something. So we're creeping up to the, we might not make 350. We've done two case studies. Because of budget cuts, we had to scale that back from proposed 6 to 8 case studies. That data has not yet been analyzed. This is what I'm going to talk about today is number 3. Here are our study questions. And really what we're looking at is to what degree are they integrated in terms of events, operations, planning, resource sharing, the full range of things that we consider in partnerships. And how can we best assess that? And part of what we're doing is we're creating a hierarchy. I don't know how I just pronounced that word differently. A hierarchy of outreach. And this is from the health departments. And the next slide will show how they all fit together. But it starts with communication outreach because, frankly, too many public service organizations, whether health departments or otherwise, simply use CBOs and FBOs as a means to disseminate their message. Period. The end. And that's great, especially if it's a hard-to-reach population. But when it stops there, it's doing everyone a disservice. So then it goes resource sharing. And an example of this, you know, as a member of a CBO myself, we were used by the Los Angeles County Public Health Department to staff a pod, a point of dispensing for flu vaccines. And we weren't giving the shots. Or, you know, whatever they were. We were doing line control and helping people fill out forms, and we had multilingual people to help complete the pre-flu shot questionnaires and so forth. So resource sharing is the next level. Next is capacity building, where the CBOs and FBOs are actually getting better at what they do as a result of the partnership. And as you can see, it progresses. And so here, I hope that's not too much of an eyesore for folks in the back, but it shows how they fit together. And really, we chose the Russian nesting doll model of approach to show how one leads to the next and how the previous skills are incorporated within. Now clearly it's possible. It is possible. And we found examples to the contrary of where, you know, here's one. There's a local health department grant to the VOAD in our county, the Voluntary Organizations Active in Disasters. Well, I'm not going to get too much into the VOAD model, but I see a lot of heads nodding. It's a great model, but it was sort of, here's your money, go have fun with it. In other words, there wasn't really an ongoing relationship as part of that funding, which led to questionable outcomes in some areas. So we are looking at, again, contextual capacity building and personal attributes, and these are how they all fit together. So here's the summary info for the third stage of the study that we did, which was the key informant interviews. We did 21 interviews representing 20 CBOs and FBOs. We had a partial match. We also did LHD interviews, and 10 of the LHDs and 10 of the CBOs, FBOs were from the same jurisdiction. We wanted to bounce people's answers across each other. You know? So let's see how they matched up. Let's see if they're giving similar answers. But we did cast a wider net for CBOs and FBOs, mostly because we wanted a good range of organizations. We had some that were faith-based in the sense of the local religious organization on the corner, the neighborhood faith-based organization, whereas some are your more formalized or interfaith or, you know, like a group like Southern Baptist Convention, for example. They represent not a particular congregation, but rather a region or an area. So we wanted, and they're also technically a 501c3, same with Catholic Charities. So we wanted to look at a range of organizations, a range of organizational types, a range of purposes, and we also made sure to include just your generic non-disaster affiliated CBOs and FBOs. We looked at organizations that have something to give if they're engaged the right way, that can play a productive role in the community disaster preparedness and response and recovery, even though they're not thought of as being one of the go-to organizations when it comes to disasters. An example, well, I have a few, but one that's on my mind right now is the Center for People with Disabilities in Boulder. You know, this isn't an organization that's networked in with the VOAD and such, but they're still incredibly resilient, and they still have a great deal to offer. It's not just needs that they have. They also have something to give back to the relationship. So we're in the process. We've done the coding. We've identified a variety of themes. And ultimately, and this has been one of those funny budget things, it was a four-year project that included a toolkit. We've been told that it's a three-year project, but we still have to do a toolkit. So our goal is to create an assessment tool that's usable by the health department so that they can get a better handle on what their network of relationships is with respect to disasters, and then how can they improve it. I want to point out that health departments have been doing this for such a long time in so many areas. Health departments are not naive or new to the idea of community engagement and community partnerships. We all know this. However, for some reason, with respect to disasters, they're not quite there yet, and it varies. You know, it's a checkerboard. Some organizations do it better than others. We're trying to figure out what that secret sauce is. How and why does that happen? But again, the idea is to transfer that same expertise that health departments have demonstrated in other partnerships and get that going in disasters. And we can talk about post 9/11 funding and, you know, priority shifts and the emergence of the professionalization of disaster organizations and such. But we're trying to figure out how to transfer that skill set. So here are some of our findings. First, we have the importance of community engagement, leadership, resources, and communication. Well, in a way, that's almost kind of self-evident. Yes, these things are important. I guess the real finding is that now we have research that supports that idea. But now let's get into the good stuff. When I ask people about facilitators and barriers, they almost universally gave the opposite of the same answer. So, well, they say facilitators are X, Y, and Z, and then the barriers are the opposite of X, Y, and Z. It wasn't a different set of things. And I don't know why that shouldn't be surprising, but we have perception, trust, transparency, expectation management, competing organizational agendas, and then organizational egos, where they believe they should be on the pecking order of things. You know, this is really good stuff, and notice it's all governance stuff. It's group dynamics, it's organizational theory, it's governance. It's not disasters. And that's the part I'm trying to bring into this. One of the key themes is that when an organization sits down with a new partner at a table, there are misperceptions about, well, what is it that you do? Or, you know, they sit down with a preconception about what the other organization should or could be providing. And so a lot of that creates problems down the road. There's an overemphasis, I think, this is my opinion, I wrote the slide, about resource sharing. It's really about the group dynamics, the intergroup dynamics and the governance issues that go with it. Because resources do matter, and funding does bring people to the table, but that's not what keeps them at the table. And that's not what keeps the relationship worthwhile. And then the thing about this, the fourth bullet, you have to identify, you have to put these barriers out in the open. You have to shine a light on them. You have to be able to talk about them honestly. There are too many examples, and the presentation I gave yesterday was a perfect case where there were two factions in this particular event, and they weren't talking to each other. They were presuming things about each other. So unless the issue is out on the table, and this is relationship 101. This has nothing to do with disasters. This is just simple partnership building. It applies to marriages or whatever else, you know? So let me keep going. This this one was a little bit interesting. It seems to us, from talking to the local health departments and also several emergency management agencies, the trend on the government side and also the more professionalized nonprofits is for more formalization, more MOUs, more binding partnerships. Whereas a lot of the CBOs and FBOs want to keep it loose and fast. They don't want that formalization. The formalization itself is a barrier to partnership. And the government counterparts don't quite seem to get this, or, they just don't understand. That happens too much. Now, honestly, both are needed. You need certain parts that are formalized and concrete for perfectly legitimate reasons, necessary reasons, and then where is the space that you could keep the relationship a little bit looser, a little bit more informal, and that might facilitate things. What we'll say about VOADs, I like VOADs, okay? The Voluntary Organizations Active in Disasters, this is the national VOAD. Then there are local VOADs or COADs. No one uses that term. It's in their book, but they all call themselves VOADs anyway. And VOADs don't always get called VOADs. Sometimes they're called ENLA or CARD or something, but that's a separate story. The real point is they are very uneven. So everywhere you go, the VOAD has different characteristics. They have this maybe the same membership, but the membership is influenced by the pre-existing network of relationships, and not just among themselves, but also with government partners. So while the VOAD model is great and I think necessary, they are not standardized in a way that facilitates effective study. I would say about half of the jurisdictions that we looked at closely have formal VOADs. The other jurisdictions don't. And in some cases, that wasn't a bad thing. They still had a working coalition of partners based on relationships. So it varies way too much. We really wanted to talk about the ways in which the non-usual suspects can contribute and are a completely untapped resource. Basically, here's my opinion, and I'm just going to go off script entirely. I'm a CERT coordinator for the Los Angeles Fire Department. Thanks. I don't want one person to ever join CERT per se. I want them to take what the training has to offer and infuse it into their own social networks. I want them to incorporate that knowledge into what they're doing, not to come join something new, because that's where it matters. It's the relationships that people have to get with each other that bind them and keep them together through adversity. Too many of the agencies we've looked at so far are locked into stage one, which is where they're just using the push model for communications. And yeah, the third bullet, I think a lot of people have been nodding their heads to that sentiment throughout the presentation so far. So personnel turnover obviously matters a lot. One thing that we haven't figured out how to study, which is very interesting, is the recycling, the revolving door of personnel within a jurisdiction. You have people that work for a CBO, then go work for the health department, then go back and work for a CBO in the same area, same zip code even. And we find this fascinating, and we're not quite sure how to tackle that one yet. It's a theme that's emerged, but I don't think we have a database yet to really do anything with that. Second, either all the relationships wind up as additional duties, not part of your job description, but you'd better do it. Exactly. Or they'll designate one staff person as the partnership person who's now responsible for the entire organization's full range of relationships with any and every organization out there. Neither does justice to the necessary need for this, okay? The necessary need? What's going on with me today? Okay. We really, truly come from this with the belief that better relationships can help the local health departments do their own job better if you set it up the right way. Rather than, oh man, I got to go maintain these relationships, but my report's due at 12. You know, they're going to do the report that's due at 12. So now we think that if they change the dynamic, the CBOs and FBOs are helping them. Here are our next steps. We are going to partner tool. I want to share partner tool with you. I'll let you read the rest. It is a free nonprofit website that allows organizations to enter in their social network info. It's all self-report. And the idea is if you belong to a network or have a coalition, get each individual member to enter their own info, and then it allows for measuring and tracking change over time. And it shows you blind spots, it shows you gaps in the network, and so forth. And it's actually a tool meant to help you solve these problems. For those who aren't familiar with social networking, all I'll really say, I mean, we're all familiar with it to a certain degree, is that it's, in my opinion, way underutilized. People hear social networking and automatically they blow it off as Facebook or something like that. That's not what I'm talking about. So she knows what I mean. Okay. So we also know that this is only part of it. There are other things that need to be done in concert to help solve this problem. And we really seem to hone in on this idea of flexible funding mandates. Too much money is specified for a particular function when it doesn't necessarily serve the organization or the community's best interests. And here is the full info for the team. I'll just leave it up there for a second until I get kicked off. So if you need to get in touch with us, that's how. And this is one of several studies that fall under this umbrella by the CDC. I think there's five of them that are active, but as part of the same larger study. Thank you.